The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer greatly from the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. Then Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him. "God forbid, Lord, no such thing shall ever happen to you." He turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an obstacle to me. You are thinking not as God does, but as human beings do." Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Whoever wishes to come after me must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. What profit would there be for one to gain the whole world and forfeit his life? Or what can one give in exchange for his life? For the Son of Man will come with his angels in his Father's glory, and then he will repay all according to his conduct." The Gospel of the Lord. Good. So once again, good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Yeah, welcome back once again, everybody. A little question for you now. A little something to think about. What does it mean when you say that you are a follower of Jesus? I just want you to think about that for just a second. You know, you say you're a follower of Jesus. What does that mean? It's an important question. You know, you pose that question to most people, and what they'll do, they'll answer by pointing to certain things that they believe. They'll say, "Well, you know, I'm a follower of Jesus because I believe Jesus is God come down to earth. I believe, you know, the Bible's true. I believe in the authority of the church. I believe in the Eucharist," right? All these things that I believe, they'll say, "Why am I a follower of Jesus?" Because I'm a believer. Tell you what's interesting, though. You look through the New Testament, and you never see the followers of Jesus described as believers. They're always called, rather, disciples. Now, that's an important word with a real specific meaning. You take the word disciple, literally it just means student, okay? But in the New Testament, it had a real specific meaning. A disciple was a follower of a rabbi. Now, your average rabbi had 5 disciples. Great Rabbi Gamaliel had 70 disciples. At this hour of the gospel that we just read, Jesus has 12 disciples. But a disciple wasn't just a student. A disciple was someone who wanted to become like his rabbi. Like, here's a modern example. Imagine LeBron James. He gets out of a car, he steps onto a basketball court. Maybe it's in some city, maybe it's in some suburb. Sees some kid playing basketball. He says, "Hey, kid, I've been watching you. You got what it takes. You can play the game like me. Now let me teach you how it's done." And he takes the kid under his wing, becomes his tutor. That's kind of like what a rabbi did to a disciple. He'd call him and he'd say, "Come follow me." And that was like the rabbi's way of saying, "You can become like me. I've seen you. You've got what it takes." And if you were a disciple of a rabbi, that meant not just that you listened to him, that meant that you wanted to talk like him, you wanted to act like him, you wanted to think like him, you wanted to become like your rabbi. They used to say that you want to follow your rabbi so closely that you're covered in the dust of his sandals. That's what it means to be a disciple. That's why whenever you hear the word disciple read in the Gospels, you want to sit up and take notice. Jesus said to his disciples, "If you want to come after me, deny yourself. Take up your cross and follow me." What does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? It means somebody who takes up his cross. Okay, so that's what we want to understand here today. What does that mean? Now, to understand, we got to reference what we heard last week, okay? Because this gospel picks up right where last week's gospel left off. So I don't know if you remember what they said last week, but I'll jog your memory, okay? Last week, Jesus founded the church on St. Peter. This week, we find out why he did it. Last week, Jesus asked, "Who do you say that I am?" This week, we find out why the answer matters so much. Because the one who will suffer and die for our salvation is none other than the eternally begotten Son of the Father. Last week, St. Peter gets everything right. This week, poor St. Peter, he gets everything wrong, right? He gets everything wrong. And Jesus says he's going to go suffer. Jesus said he's going to go die. Peter says, "God forbid, Lord, no such thing's ever going to happen to you." Now listen to what Jesus says in reply after that. He says, "Get behind me, Satan." Last week, Jesus gave Peter a brand new name. You remember? Simon, your name is Peter. This week, Jesus gives Peter another brand new name. Let's just be thankful this one didn't stick. Last week, Jesus says, "Peter, you're the rock." This week, he says, "You're an obstacle." You know what's interesting about that word obstacle? The actual word Matthew uses in the gospel in Greek is scandalon. Scandalon was another kind of rock. Scandalon was a rock that you tripped over and made you fall. Brand new kind of rock Peter is this week. And Jesus says, "You're thinking, Peter, not the way God thinks, but the way human beings think about suffering and death." So, how do human beings think about suffering? How do we think about suffering? Well, it's pretty natural. It's something we want to avoid. Most people, they wake up in the morning, and you know, although you may not think this consciously, you do think, how can I avoid trouble today, right? I don't want trouble. I don't want stress. I don't want suffering. I don't want anything, no risk. How can I make sure I get through this day without worrying about trouble or suffering? That's how most people think. Nothing wrong with that, but let me give you another way to think, okay? Consider this. Imagine somebody wakes up in the morning, and the first question they ask is not, "What can I do today to make my life easier?" But, "What can I do today to make somebody else's life better?" Imagine that. Imagine somebody wakes up in the morning, and the first question they ask of themselves is not, "What suffering can I avoid today?" But rather, "What can I do to do good today, no matter what suffering it might cost me?" That, brothers and sisters, is the mindset of the saints. That is how God thinks. That is what it means to take up your cross. Now, when we hear the word cross, we tend to think of it as like a metaphor, don't we? Like, if I say, "Take up your cross," what do you think in your mind when I say, "Take up your cross"? Most people think that means, well, you know, I'm going to accept my share of the hardship that comes to me in life. Take up your cross, that means I'm going to strive to keep the commandments. Take up your cross, that means I'm going to do my job, I'm going to do my duty, I'm going to do it as well as I can. We think of it in a metaphoric sense. When Jesus first said these words here in the gospel, though, remember, there was no metaphor. When Jesus said, "Take up your cross," cross meant one thing and one thing only. It was a Roman form of execution. People would have thought that this was shocking, that this was grisly, that this was disturbing. That's how it would have sounded when Jesus first said, "Take up your cross." Now, you want to know what's disturbing and shocking to us? You know what is disturbing and shocking to us? It's the idea that God would allow us to suffer. Most people instinctively think that if they're suffering, that God's mad at them. They think that if they're suffering, God is AWOL. We tend to think like Job, don't we? Right? "God, where have you gone? Why have you abandoned me?" It's a shocking thing for us to think that God would ever allow anybody to suffer. You can look at a philosophical argument for atheism. Take a look at it someday. Every argument that God doesn't exist reduces to one argument. there's suffering in the world, and God would never allow that to happen. That's the way human beings think. Let me give you another way to think, all right? Not so much suffering, but rather sacrifice. Tell you a little story. I know a priest who did a wedding for this couple. And by every visible measure that you could measure, they were the perfect couple. I mean, she looked like a fashion model. He looked like he would be best suited on the cover of a sports magazine. And not only that, but they were charming, and they were witty, and they were delightful, and just the perfect couple, and everyone just expected them to live happily ever after. Happily ever after. Unfortunately, he got sick. It wasn't long before he contracted some kind of a disease. It was like Lou Gehrig's disease. It might have been Lou Gehrig's disease. First, he started slurring his speech. And then he started losing control of, you know, the motion of his arms and legs. And slowly, slowly, he became paralyzed and bedridden. And his wife cared for him. And she would go into work, and she would come home at lunchtime. She'd commute twice a day. Commute back from work for lunch, and she'd feed him, and she'd clean him, and she'd wash him, and she'd care for him, and she'd go back to work, back and forth, day in and day out, week in and week out, month in and month out, and he got worse and worse and worse, and it really took a toll on her until one night, a friend came over to her house for dinner, and she said, "Take a look at you. You're wearing yourself out. You can't keep this up. You've got to hire somebody to do this for you. This is just too much. You'll never make it. Don't you understand?" she said. "Don't you understand?" And the woman said, "I do understand. But you do not understand." And pointing to her dying husband, she said, "I love him. I love him." You see, ladies and gentlemen, there's a difference between suffering and sacrifice. The difference is love. The difference is who you're suffering for. When we forget who we're suffering for, we take our eyes off God. We take our eyes off the well-being of other people. That's when our hearts sink. That's when we become like Jeremiah in the first reading. Did you hear that? Jeremiah, he turns to God and he says, "You duped me, O Lord. You tricked me. I came following you and it led me to suffering. You tricked me, God. That wasn't supposed to happen." We're all like that. When we take our eyes off God, we forget the difference between suffering and sacrifice. But God calls us to endure hardships for the well-being of somebody else. That's what it means to be Jesus' disciple. That, brothers and sisters, is what it means to follow Christ. I don't often read things from the pulpit, but this is something you might like. It's a tiny little meditation from St. Francis de Sales, and it's called Your Cross. And it goes like this. "The everlasting God has in his wisdom foreseen from all of eternity the cross he now presents to you as a gift from his all-knowing eyes. Understood with his divine mind, tested with his wise justice, warmed with his loving arms, and weighed with his own hands to see that it might not be 1 inch too large nor 1 ounce too heavy for you. He's blessed it with his holy name, anointed it with his grace, perfumed it with his consolation, taken one last glance at you and your courage, and then sent it to you from heaven, a gift from the arms of the all-merciful love of God." St. Francis de Sales, Your Cross. You know, Christianity is the only religion in the world in which God suffers, sacrifices for the well-being of his people. And then he says, "You've got it in you. You can become like me. You have the grace and the power and the strength to love the way I do. I believe in you," God says. And we can. And we must. You know, St. Peter, he got it wrong today, but eventually he got it right. St. Peter saw what happened on Good Friday. St. Peter saw what happened on Easter Sunday. He stopped trying to give Jesus advice. He took up his cross. He followed behind the Lord, and he became a blessing for everyone who knew him. Let's you and I have the faith and the courage to do the same. Amen.